The UFO Contacts of Enrique Castillo Rincon in Bogota, Colombia. Part 2. Engineer Enrique Rincon got off the bus more than 150 kilometers from the capital. It was about 8 o'clock in the evening of Saturday, 3 November 1973. This was near the appointed place, where he had been telepathically told to wait for them. He had been told to carry nothing that could cause harm or damage to anyone or anything. He had arrived a little in advance of the appointed time, because he had to walk a ways around a small lake, and he didn't want to be late. He was wearing a ruana, a kind of poncho, and a sombrero. He arrived at the site that had been designated before this appointed time. He had been given his instructions in a communication prior to embarking on this trip. When he arrived near the lake, everything was familiar to him, as if he had been there before, as if he were now reliving something he had already done before, and he could see the place that would be marked by the metal sphere placed there to guide him. He thought, good, this is the place. I arrived with great anticipation, Enrique recalled, and walking too close to the lake, stepped in water up to my knees. It was very cold in Bogota. Our study group was meditating at this very moment. They were praying that all would work out well in my anticipated meeting with the spacecraft. There were more than 30 others in this study group in Bogota who had developed a voice channel contact some time before with a communicator who said he was a visitor from another planet to Earth. Remember that this happened 20 to 25 years before the method of channeling became normal. Roll remark. A number of voice channel recordings were made and many questions were asked and answered. In response to a request for a more direct face-to-face meeting, the group was invited to choose one member from among them to represent them in such a meeting. They had chosen Rincon, leading their channel with a group in meditation in Bogota, so I forged ahead. I came to the small metal sphere in the exact site described. I remembered having seen in my preview of this scene, a woman with a child in her arms and a burro carrying some wood, and two dogs and another child walking along beside. So I waited. Sure enough, they were there too. They looked at me a little strangely but continued walking, and I continued walking normally also. I arrived at the point where I could see two clumps of trees exactly as I had seen in the preview some time before. I did not know which was the intended one, so I picked up the sphere and went into the nearest Ontario, thinking since I had the sphere they would know where I went. The sphere became activated and began to heat up. It was about the size of a golf ball and was full of small holes. As soon as I took it into my hands it began to heat up and small rays of light shot out of the holes. It got so hot that I had to hold it with the point of my poncho to carry it. I had the impression that it was something like a compass, but it did not have any needle, or anything else. It was a metallic sphere of some material like stainless steel. I went into the clump of trees remembering mentally that over there was where I had seen a clearing. I reached it about 2010, some 10 minutes late. I was worried about this. I still had the sphere in my hands and I looked around me, but didn't see anything unusual. I looked up and saw only branches and leaves. Then I heard something like a distant boat motor which was lost in the distance. I waited in the woods as the minutes passed terribly slow. I looked at my watch and it was now 2015. I thought, dear God, what is going to happen? Protect me in any case. I began to feel fear. It gave me a sincere fright. There I was, representing all the people who were praying for me and thinking of backing out. I decided I will not give up. At 2025 I began to hear a tremendous noise. I was in the woods and could not tell where it was coming from. Suddenly the whole area was illuminated brilliantly. Two huge craft approached and passed directly over me. They came streaming water as if they had come from the bottom of the lake. Water cascaded from the sides like from a submarine when it surfaces. I waited breathless as I watched. They flew over me and the whole area warmed up from the heat. They must have put out a tremendous amount of energy. These craft were flattened disc forms, and underneath I could see something that rotated, and below that, saw three large white round parts that turned slowly. A colored light came out. These gigantic objects, such tremendous spectacle, gave me new cause for alarm. And then it fell silent. I could only hear a very low sound dying down. They hung there in the sky about 100 meters between the two as best I could calculate. These objects were shaped like huge soup plates joined at the rims. They were about 45 meters in diameter, and about 12 from top to bottom. I could see the cupola on top very clearly. The light slowly dimmed down, leaving only a small bright light source illuminated. It lighted only the area directly under the craft, then one of the ships began to approach. The other remained quietly in place. It gave me new fright to see this tremendous monster so close. And then it stopped, suspended above the small screen there, and two lateral beams of light came on. These new beams shined down, and I saw two beings descending in them, as in an elevator. In their descent they disappeared behind the trees from my position, and I couldn't see them land. Then I heard their steps as they approached. At this moment all of the lights on the spacecraft went out and they remained completely silent. After seeing the tremendous luminosity, bright as day, I couldn't see anything when the light went out, and then I heard the steps of the beings, and then I saw them at about 10 meters away. They approached separated one from the other. They wore helmets and suits that seemed very fitted, and I could see them clearly as they neared me. Then I heard the first telepathic communication, "Brother, we are here. Do not fear, we are your friends." I tried to coordinate my ideas and thought, yes, why not, I am not afraid. Then I heard the voice say, "I am your friend, Enrique, do not be afraid." I shook my head. I could see that they were tall, more than 1.70 meters in stature. When they came up to within 2 meters of me, he said, "I am your friend. Do not be afraid." I said, "Yes," and the other said, "If you are not ready, we can suspend this until another day. If you are not afraid, we can continue this contact, and we may ascend aboard." I said I was ready and took a step forward so that they could see that I had lost my fear. They noticed that I was still a little wary, and one of them took me by the hand and the other by my shoulder and said, "Walk with us up to the light." We went a few meters forward, and one of them said, "Straight ahead. You feel a little worry in your head and in your body, but nothing is going to happen to you." The other said, "Brother Enrique, we guarantee it. We do not want to cause you any harm. Moreover, if you are still afraid, you may return, and we will prepare this for another day." I could not see their faces for the helmets. I asked if the helmets had visors, and a form of visor raised a little in front of one, showing the nose and mouth, but partly covering the mouth, which had a rectangular shape. I could not see the Mameluco spacesuit well because of the dark, and I could not see up to now exactly what color they were. Then they stopped me and said they could sense a little worry. At that moment the spacecraft came forward and flashed a ray of light. I felt tremendous thrills and some twitching in all the skin of my head, like needle picking me. I stood erect and began to ascend. When I saw it that I was leaving the trees below, I thought, what if I should fall? I continued to ascend like in an elevator. I was surrounded by a yellowish light. It gave me the impression of being solid. I tried to touch it with my hands, and it felt solid like crystal. It must have been only energy, because I did not see crystal. I didn't see anything, but when I touched the light it felt solid. I felt a thump, and then a port began to open, and there it was fully open, and I was inside and it closed. A moment later the other two entered, removed their helmet and smiled. They had taken their helmets off, so I could see their faces. They asked me for the sphere, which I gave them, and then they said, "Wait here, take off your clothes." And I took everything off. They opened an automatic port and we entered. Then they opened a side port, like a window, and looked at me smiling. I heard a voice say, "Do not be afraid, we are going to enter a little smoke, but this is necessary. Do not be afraid." In spite of their assurances, I associated this immediately with the Nazi gassing of the Jews. I did not see where the smoke came from, but it came in, and it smelled like lemon. It only lasted a minute and was then drawn out through some rectangular openings in the wall and disappeared. Then I noticed that there was no shadow from my body anywhere, and I thought, where is the light coming from? I could not see any lamps. Then they gave me my clothes, which I put on, leaving the ruana and sombrero aside. They opened the door and said, "Now you may proceed." They explained that the process was simply to disinfect everything from whatever microbes we may have brought from the Earth's surface. I went into the first compartment that they opened, and there were four persons seated there waiting for me. I came to the first one and he said, "Enrique, how are you?" and gave me his hand. He gave me his hand like we shake hands and said, "How are you, brother? I am going to shake your hand." " said another. This, " indicating the first, is the commander. He said his name was what sounded like Kramish. I gave him my hand, and he gave me some thumps on it. The rest greeted me this way also. The only one who did not give me his hand was the first who had said, "Brother Enrique." He now turned to me and said, "I am Cyril." I said, "How are you, Cyril?" " and he said, "Cyril, Cyril Weiss, remember in 1969 in Caracas, Venezuela, at the entrance to the theater, when we met?" And I said, "Cyril Weiss, but you are a little changed, and what are you doing here?" And he said, "I am one of the crew of this ship." I was terribly surprised. He said, "We have been in contact with you for 8 years. I understood now why they had given me their hands like Terrans. Then he presented me to the others. There was one by the name of Kramikin, another named Krulila, and Krenza, and then he told me that his name was not No Cyril, but Krishnamurk. The name sounded Hindu. They all spoke telepathically except the one who spoke first, who articulated words to me in perfect Spanish. They seated me there at a table, as of crystal, with seats of a material like plastic with a leather-like finish. The beings were all dressed alike, except they had two types of suits. Some wore silver-colored outfit and others had suits of a Coca-Cola color. There were others who had similar suits in a dark gray color with orange gauntlets and orange boots. One of them took off his gauntlets, so I could see his hands, which were perfectly formed. Their faces were beautiful and without blemishes and imperfections, but clean like a child. Their hair was long, coming almost to their shoulders. Kramikin told me that he is the commander of that ship and that there are 12 crew members. They are making contacts in order to divulge to them clearly what is going to happen on this Earth. I asked him what kind of contacts, and he said, "Men like you?" He didn't say more on this, and I did not pursue the subject further. I then asked him if they had women aboard, and he said, "Yes, we have women with us, but at the moment we will not see them." Then I remembered that he could read my thoughts before I asked the question and knew I was going to ask it before I even formed the words. We began with the first questions. I had brought many questions given me by the study group. Almost all of them were of a religious nature. I did not want to ask those at this time. I began by asking them where they were going to get their contacts and why they had chosen me. They told me that my name was not really Enrique. They told me another name which I still have revealed to nobody. I am waiting to see what develops in all of this first. I got the impression that they knew something about previous incarnations of mine for some reason. I asked them where they came from and they in reply said, "The Pleiades." I asked them, "Where are the Pleiades?" And they said, "It is what you call the Seven Sisters." And then I remembered that it is a small constellation having seven bright stars. I asked them how far it was from here, and they said, "You say that it is more than 328 light years from here, which is not true. It is much farther." Later they told their home place as Shilelho, the name which they called their home sun somewhere in what we call the Pleiades. So I asked them, "How did you make the trip?" Perhaps I was asking them infantile questions, but for me they were important. "How did you make such a long trip?" They answered, "Do you know anything about relativity?" They told me that Albert Einstein's theory was not complete, that we are going to have to make three corrections. That the velocity of light is not in fact 300,000 kilometers per second as we believe, but much more. And they went on to explain details that I could not follow. Then they told me that there is another measure of time, unknown to us, in which we cannot remain long, in physical bodies. I did not pursue this further after that. They took me to visit various rooms. I saw a room for meditation. They said it was where they rest and meditate. It was beautifully appointed, with tremendously exquisite brickcase. Another room was a laboratory, where there were flasks of a green substance. I asked about this, and they said that it was chlorophyll which they had extracted from our trees, a substance vital to their own alimentary system. They use it in preparing various food items. They had fruits also. They told me they ate much fruit from South America. They particularly like the duraznos, peaches and melocotons, apricots, and they carried much fruit, corn, wheat, rice and other vegetable substances to compensate for what they had taken. They used an ionizing radiant beam that accelerated the life process of the plants, and caused them to replace their fruit in a few hours. I didn't quite understand this, that they could project a radiation that could accelerate the growth and maturity of the plants from which they had taken produce, and cause it to be replaced in hours. This was incredible. I began to understand another thing. They knew about biological engineering and could control the genetic codes by means of a process which they called consubstantiation. By this process they could continue the life forces of a cell forever. They told me they were there on a mission. They belong to a brotherhood of civilizations, with others, from which they had received specific orders for our world. They pointed out that we have always been guided indirectly by certain great personalities who have passed through our civilizations throughout history. Those so-called masters, some approaching divinity, have always had contact with extraterrestrials. I had a feeling that these beings had been sent on a mission pertaining to the evolution of our planet. Van Kramiken, the commander, permitted me to visit the control room, where I saw great electronic maps on a wall. I saw the great panorama around us through the green glass cupola. There were three men seated, and as we entered they came over and greeted me, and then returned to the control panels of the craft. The control room was the third level, under the dome on the top of this craft. When I saw the maps he took me to them, and explained that they were cosmic maps. I could not understand them. I saw small lights. They moved a control, and I saw small lights like neon, in various colors, begin to take form on the map panel. There were points of light and lines of light, and some of the lines were indefinite. Some of the greater points of light represented galaxies and nebulosities. They said that many thousands of inhabited planets are in contact with each other and exchange cultural, technological, and scientific information. Some are tremendously advanced in spiritual and scientific evolution. I asked which planets, and he said it would be needless to tell me as the names would mean nothing to me anyway. He told me that where the lines between the lights were brighter there was regular commerce, these dimmer ones were under exploration. The indefinite ones were lesser developed. They were on the map, but they lacked thousands of years of development before they were ready for contact. They do have a sense of time because they talked of millions of years, but I had difficulty coordinating this with their discussion of laws of relativity, where time changes. Also, they seem to be aware of future time because they told me that we are going to experience a third world war and that they know exactly when it will start. They desire that all men unite in one thought, to seek real peace for the whole planet without distinction of race, creed or color. That in the next few years we are going to make the greatest discovery in the history of the planet, the discovery of God, the final truth. But how is this possible? I said, if we already believe in God. Their answer was, you have never believed in God in a normal form, and I think I know what they meant. They called it a great unknowable, preferring to give the force no name. They told me that we have to distinguish between the inner and the outer forces, and I began to understand that we have searched for God outside, when in reality it is within, and that the kingdom of God is in every one of us. We must understand this first, before we will live in peace and understanding with all men. They told me that they were in a way emissaries of beings superior to them, and that they had been the destroyers of Sodom and Gomorrah. This gave me a great sensation. I said, how can you be judges? How can you destroy a nation with thousands of people, including many innocents? They said, you cannot comprehend this now. We will try to explain. We were emissaries of forces superior to us that govern the cosmos, and when they give us an order, we carry it out, and in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah it was exactly that. They sent emissaries, they warned the people and they refused to understand and would not believe that which was happening over their heads. The hour arrived and it had to be destroyed. I thought, how could they be the judges? And I said that I could not understand, that I would not go into detail, but that I also could not understand. For me it was not important to know at that time, because there were other things. They told me the time of the beginning of the Third World War, and told me also that they had been the inspirers and the consultants on the building of the Great Pyramids, where they have placed many years of the Earth's history. In the future, we are going to discover two cities in South America, where there are records of the origin of the Earth's races, how they came here, how the history was written, and why it was done. They told me the time of the beginning of World War III and said that we could delay that time 3 or 4 years, and its intensity by a condition of heart, that mankind alone could do this, because they are not permitted to interfere with nor restrict the freedom of action of a civilization such as is developing here. I understood what they meant quite clearly, and didn't have to ask twice. They answered all my questions rapidly. When I asked them if we could go someplace, they said, "We are already traveling. From the moment you entered the craft we have been traveling." They took me to a special panel there, like a great telescope, which I was allowed to look through, and it gave me the strange impression that I had gone out of there into space, which was very still. There was no feeling of acceleration. It felt like the aircraft was standing still, and not moving at all. I didn't hear any sound, and I couldn't detect the least movement. They seated me in front of a panel which they opened and said, "Here is your house. We seem stationary some 5,000 to 10,000 meters above it," and they focused it into the telescopic device. They said it was an electronic device, but it had to be very advanced over any electronic telescope of ours, because it could penetrate walls and metals, and I could see my family sleeping. I asked them if we could look at something else, and the craft which had been hovering over my house now began to move about, and I looked at the two great avenues in the city, and saw the autos and the people in the streets. Time passed and we talked much. I looked at my watch, and had to look again. It read 2025. Krishnamurti said, "Your watch is not going to function until you leave this craft." And he laughed. I asked him what caused this and he said, "Precisely when you came within the field of this craft, and its energy force it stopped. It may not work again. They must have a different notion of time from ours, because I did not see clocks of any kind aboard." He just smiled and dropped the subject. I did not want to bother him about how long I had been aboard, as it did not matter anyway. He told me things about all our religions which at this time I do not want to divulge. He told me something about the Fatima letter, which they seemed to know all about. At that time I understood though, and I understood also something that I had learned in the Mormon Church, that hidden in the heart of all men are the great truths of all time, waiting to be awakened, and that this awakening must come from within. We talked about many other things that came to mind. They gave me a kind of chocolate bar, sealed in plastic, which I opened and ate. It had a taste like Savagin, a kind of mild liquor sold in Colombia, and my hunger disappeared completely. And then he said, "We have something that we want to give you that is very important." My body began to warm up all over. "You are going to eat something very interesting, and which you will like very much." They brought me something like large white corn taco and told me to eat it. I broke it, and put some in my mouth. In a moment I felt a tremendous sensation and warm feeling. I thought at that moment that they were drugging me. "Cyril," Krishnamurti said, "do you know what they called that? The Jews were fed on that for 40 years in the desert." "The manna of the scriptures," apostrophe I said. "No more, no less," apostrophe was the reply. "You are eating manna and you will not get hungry for 24 hours. It gives you tremendous energy. It is prepared for us." Then ideas began to rush into my head, so fast I could not coordinate them. I thought of Elias and of Moses, and then I returned to the present. I felt like I was going crazy. They laughed and simply observed, "We were one of those who helped the Jews. Our great ship were always camouflaged. They could be made invisible by a simple change of vibrational energy, right over the heads of the people, and they could not see them." I couldn't understand this then, and I can't today. I have a little more knowledge about it now, but I still do not completely understand. The public has asked many questions and I have tried to answer, but I must confess my ignorance concerning a civilization so advanced as this, and they were trying to simplify everything as much as possible, so that I could understand it better. After eating the substance it made me sleepy, and they let me sleep about 3 hours. Then they came and wakened me. I was lying on a very comfortable bed, and where I had been lying I left the imprint of my body. Pardon me, Enrique, you have awakened, because we gave you a suggestion to awaken at this point. You are going to receive your last information, and it is time we left you in the place where we met you, apostrophe a voice said. Kramakin had gone someplace and did not return. We circled the eastern plains and they showed me a site that was illuminated like day. It was the site where we would next meet. Look well and observe the highway. Here we will meet again on the 18th of this month at 8 o'clock in the evening. They lowered the ship and passed slowly so that I could see the place well. I saw that the highway was long and ran through the mountains. I tried to remember all I could of the place, thinking I may have to come here by horse. Then they took me back and left me in the exact place where they had picked me up. They bid me goodbye with a form of embrace. With Cyril Weiss, I always talked in Spanish. The others bid me goodbye with strokes on the shoulder. We will see you, Cyril said, and I descended to the ground. They left me off about 5 o'clock in the morning. I slept a little, awakened and saw it that my watch was running, and indicated 11:15. I left the place running as fast as I could. I wanted to tell the whole world what had happened. The first person I met was a farmer leading a burro, and I said, "Pardon me, sir, what time is it?" He replied, "Almost 8 o'clock in the morning, sir." I calculated that I had slept about 3 hours. When I caught the bus at the road, I wanted to tell everybody. I wanted to tell the whole world what I had just lived, and I wanted to embrace all men. I was happy. When I returned to the house I had left the night before, I found some 60 people awaiting me. I met with a man who had made the telepathic contacts, and began to give him the first information about the experience. I told him about the war and its timing, and the great destruction, and the great religious power around the earth, and the years that remained of normal life. Nobody believed me, of course. They thought I was attacking religion and society for some reason of my own. I did not say much more then nor ever in public, because I could see that it would cause confusion and possibly even harm. I could only hope that someday all men would arrive at an understanding of the things I had just been shown. That is all that I can say about that first contact now. *** comments from Wendell Stewens, the books, UFO Contact from the Pleiades, author of the book that this is extracted from Colinus was amazing. Enrique Carlos Rincon had received almost the same information from Pleiadians as was outlined to Edward Meyer in Switzerland, by other Pleiadians, only a little over a year later. The philosophy expressed and the criticism of our world deficiencies was almost identical, yet nothing had been released out of the Bogota group until some time after the Swiss contacts began. Even more astounding was the receptivity of the UFO community over these momentous events unfolding before their very eyes. An international UFO Congress was gathered in Acapulco in 1978 to assess the world UFO situation up to that time. It was well organized and well attended. One of the featured speakers at that Congress was Enrique Carlos Rincon, who very briefly described his contacts with Pleiadianets. His lecture was coolly received, and politely put down by all the experts there, presumably because it had happened to him and not them. Jim Lorenzen of a pro, or of the stronger advocates of contactee phenomenon at a time when most other clubs were throwing them out, sat next to Rincon at the speaker's table for 3 full days, and never asked for more details on Rincon's contact experiences, and never published anything on Rincon's report, although I had by that time briefed him on what I found happening in Switzerland. He didn't believe me, and he didn't believe Rincon. I never told him about any of the other Pleiadian cases I was encountering. He still refuses to accept any validity to any Pleiadian contact case. It was after that that I discovered the Acaya contacts going on in Peru, and learned that Pleiadianets were discussing almost the same spiritual philosophies and scenario of events concerning our world, and that witness was unaware of the other two, and they of him and his contacts. I knew nothing then of the Pleiadian contacts going on with Pedro Romaniuk in Argentina or others with Debris in Arkansas, here in the USA, and again the philosophies and scenario of events was very similar. They all came under severe criticism for what they were revealing, and so they all began to hold back and release less and less to the world. That is the situation we are in today. Amazing indeed. More from this first meeting, now from the book of Enrique, here from page 63 in the book, where Enrique asks how they can know so much about things on Earth. And they answer, it is very easy, making our ships invisible, camouflaging them above your cities. Thanks to a special vibratory field, we fly practically above your head, yet you do not notice it. We fool your radars, creating confusion with our maneuvers. We handle our ships whatever way we want to. Those are the advantages of our technology. On the other hand, we have people on the ground, blended with the humans who daily walk the streets and avenues of your large and small towns, as in my instance back in 1969. Many of us are among you. Quote, at this point it occurred to me to ask once more about the super high velocities they achieved to move through space, how they had traveled from the Pleiades to Earth, and whether they could give me any more information without harming their own interests. Cyril took me with two other crewmen to a section where the machine that generated the power used for their displacements was located. My heart beat quickly. What emotion to become perhaps the first Earthling to see in operation the engine that propelled the ship. When we entered the security zone, Commander Cramier was waiting for us. He must have entered through an alternate access way. When we entered, several alarms were activated, with a signal that went directly to the belts of the crew. They explained that the other crewmen had been warned about our presence in the propulsion area, which was also apparent at the remote control panels in other areas. Ahead of us was a window embedded in a metal wall, and in front of it were two comfortable chairs. They invited me to sit in one of the chairs, and get close to the window, wonder of wonders. In the innards of the ship, a group of three great diamonds or crystals rotated slowly around a vertical shaft extending from ceiling to floor, which turned also, in the opposite direction. The colors and shades of the shaft surface were like a kaleidoscope of pure crystal. I was truly fascinated by the gorgeous spectacle. When I removed my face from the window, to ask some questions, I sensed that my features probably showed some pallor. The crewman, smiling, watched me carefully. I addressed Cyril, but the commander answered, guessing my question. Those are crystals, not diamonds. We call them memory crystals. They are programmable, and receive information from the main transducer, the rotating shaft. We also call them living crystals. We obtain them on a certain planet, where they grow and reproduce. I had noticed that the crystals rotated around themselves, united to a base, that also turned around the main transducer, or shaft. The crystals must have been about 70 centimeters in diameter, maybe less. I was watching the same movement as of the Earth around the Sun, but in miniature. I was breathless, but the answer to my next question left me even more flabbergasted. Commander, could you speed up the movement of the crystals so I can see better the colors and reflections? No, Enrique, he answered, it is not possible while you are here on board. If we speed up the rotation for only 2 minutes, when you get off the ship, more than 200 Earth years will have elapsed. As you well can understand, we cannot do it. Anguish overcame me. I thought about my family, my friends, and how the planet might change in 200 years, if the extraterrestrial were telling me the truth, and all this could happen almost instantaneously. I thought here Einstein's relativity theories come into place. I could not stop feeling astonished. To calm me, the commander addressed me once more, my anguish centered on the possibility that someone of the crew could speed up the crystals, forgetting that I still was aboard the ship. And I could become ruined 200 years in the future, knowing no one, without a family, in a totally changed world. No, Enrique, that is not possible while you are here on board. I am the one who commands the ship mentally, and we have thus reduced the possibilities for error. If something should happen to me, other members of the crew have authority to carry out the mind-machine integration, where the coupling takes place directly by means of mental impulses, to the transducer and crystals program. The mental energy that we deliver is translated as flight energy. That is why we told you that we have just left. For us, the time factor is not a problem. We live in a present that modifies the future. That is why the future is malleable, and cannot be predicted with certainty, not so the past, that is already history and is unmodifiable. with their hands over their folded arms, two of them watched my reactions to the information they were giving me, so crazy sounding to my flimsy terrestrial knowledge. Inside my brain, questions stirred without answers. I was facing one of the greatest opportunities in history, and could not manage to pose good questions. Because of my ignorance, perhaps I was wasting the chance to acquire great knowledge. I was the living proof that collective reactions can be fatal for our civilization, for I could not integrate within myself how they could travel at the speed of thought without suffering physical alterations. How had they solved the problem? Perhaps their bodies had some different organs, or were they a race that achieved mastery over life and death? Later I would obtain an answer that may be the key as to how they vanquished the barrier of disease and death. But for comprehending how the mental energy referred to by the commander and Cyril was produced, I had yet to witness another sensational show. That same mental force that reached the transducer achieved the vertiginous speed of thought. I could not recover from my astonishment. Why did they tell and teach me such things? And what was the role I played, or was about to play, in light of this avalanche of information? How were people going to believe me? Was there a preconceived plan, prior to my contact? What were their real motivations? As I wrote these lines in the year 1976, and in the 20 years since then, the panorama was, and is, still unclear. To be true, I do not know the motivations for why I was chosen for contact with the extraterrestrials. Maybe in the course of time, when more results are obtained from research carried out by scientists in all disciplines, it will become clear not only what was the reason for my contact, but also what is the logical explanation for all encounters with intelligent citizens from outer space. While reflecting on all this aboard their ship, I was directed to climb a ladder going up to a walkway. We arrived at the Great Hall, at whose center the kaleidoscope or transducer rotated, the same that I had seen through the visor. The room appeared to be devoid of furniture or visible accoutrements. We stopped at the entrance. Cyril and Ninula escorted the commander. Kramakin arrived, and then some additional crew appeared through another entrance at the opposite side of the room. They were 12 altogether. I thought, how was the ship traveling, if the total crew was 12? 8 of the extraterrestrials wore the dull gray uniform, and the other 4, including Commander Kramer, were dressed in the reddish-brown type. Thought power of the ship all of a sudden, before my weary eyes and already tired senses, 12 chairs emerged from the floor. They looked like dentist's chairs, located in a circle around the transducer. Then, lo and behold, from the ceiling dropped 12 helmets, similar to motorcycle helmets, which descended onto the heads of each of the crew members, as soon as they sat in the chairs. The 4 with a different uniform sat precisely equidistant. They held hands in padlock fashion, each one holding the arm of the next until the circle was complete. I, from my observation post, watched the scene in complete surprise. This ritual lasted perhaps 1 minute. Then the helmets retracted up into the ceiling, the company stood up, and released each other's hands, and the chairs collapsed into the floor. All of them returned to their normal duties, except Kramer and Cyril, who now watched me, waiting for my customary questions. They said that I had seen them liberate their mental energy to the transducer, where it would be converted into flight energy, as also told in the book of Space Women Speaks over Saturn with the extraterrestrials. Everything was surprising. Had they performed this ritual with the sole purpose of being seen? But what was their purpose, and to whom should I tell about it? It was obvious that they did it so that I would tell about it. But to whom? We came back to the control room through the observation panel. I realized that we had covered many kilometers, moving at random. My eyelids were very heavy, and I was tired. Somebody asked, "Are you sleepy, Enrique? Would you like to rest?" It was evident, and the commander ordered the others to take me some place to rest. All of them stood up, and Cyril led the way. "You are going to rest, Enrique." Ninula went with us. He didn't leave us for a second. We walked out to a straight corridor, no longer than 4 meters, and reached another room, whose door opened automatically, without using any manual control. The room was well lighted,